Both the nation and the Commonwealth seem to be reaching agreement on the need for significant police reform. A recent Suffolk University poll found that here in Massachusetts, almost 88% of people support banning chokeholds, for example. And on a national level, a recent AP poll found that more than two-thirds of people surveyed believe we need a clear national standard for police use of force. Yet, police reform has stalled in Congress. Why? Joining us now is Massachusetts Congressman Stephen Lynch. Congressman Lynch, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you, Tiziana. Good to join you.
So, Congressman, last week both parties introduced police reform legislation, Democrats in the House, Republicans in the Senate. I mentioned this broad public support that seems to be out there, but both bills also now seem stalled. Why is that?
Well, you know, I think there's a vast difference between the two bills. I could say for our part, the House bill does ban chokeholds that are designed to, you know, stop the oxygen flow to a detainee, and that's very, very important. We have some chokeholds that are authorized in use of force policies across the United States in over 16,000 police departments and sheriff's departments that would not be allowed on the battlefield in Iraq or Afghanistan, because you're not allowed to, deny oxygen to a detainee. And yet we have them, as in Minneapolis. They had one that authorized an officer to use a chokehold to knock out, to render unconscious a detainee, an unarmed detainee. And that's the one that Officer Chauvin used against George Floyd. So, that should not be the case. And so many of these departments have not updated their use of force policies in over 50 years. So we think there's a uniform standard that needs to be implemented.
There are some differences, Congressman, between the two bills. You talked about that, differences in whether or not to limit qualified immunity for police officers, differences in how to treat military equipment going to police. But wouldn't this be a moment where it would make sense to work really hard to try to find something that could pass both houses of Congress?
You would think. However, you know, there's a difference between compromise and surrender. So let's just take the no-knock warrant piece. We basically banned, that was prominent in the death of Breonna Taylor, where they used a no-knock warrant, went in, and ended up shooting her by mistake.
A woman shot in her home in Louisville, Kentucky, just for listeners.
Correct.
Go ahead.
Correct. So the Senate bill says that those no-knock warrants are still valid. They can still be used, but the department has to file a public notice that they have used it after the fact. That's not compromise. That's basically status quo. So some of the things that they want, they've put a bill together, but it really, in large part, leaves no room for negotiation because they want to do nothing, right? They want to keep the status quo. The one area where
but I want to stop you there. I apologize for interrupting you, but I want to stay on that point for a minute, because both Republicans say that Democrats are the ones who actually shut down debate in the Senate. And there are critics saying that it actually works for the Democrats in the fall to not have a bill in place, to have that issue open. You're saying that it benefits the Republicans to maintain the status quo. So how do we... how do we square that?
I'm just saying they're pushing their agenda. I don't know what's going to happen in November. I think we need to do something right now. I think we can't let this moment pass. But just so you know, the Democrats voted against cloture. Cloture stops debate. So the Democrats didn't vote to end debate. They voted to keep it going. In other words,
although that keeps it from going to conference, where Nancy Pelosi, for example, has said she's open to there being negotiation about reconciling the bills.
But they wanted to talk about it, right? So you want to, if you're a member of the Senate, if you're a Democrat, or even if you're a reasonably thoughtful person, you want to vote for that to end debate and send that to a vote? I think that would be abdicating your responsibility, given as you've noted, the widespread support across the country for meaningful reform. They didn't put in meaningful reform. They avoided meaningful reform in their bill. So I give credit to my Senate colleagues that voted against cloture to keep the debate going. We do have a solid bill in the House, but they've got to try to do something that actually would make a difference in the Senate and not just rubber stamp something that does very little. There is one area, however. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead. No, because I'm going to shift gears. So please.
Yeah, there is one area over the what is the legal standard to surpass immunity? That's an area where I think there is legitimate debate, and we can sit down and we can try to hammer that out. Where would it afford well-intentioned, thoughtful police officers? What would protect them from liability, but get at those people like Chauvin, who had 17 public complaints against his activity. Get at the bad people, but not exposed good police officers to liability.
Okay, so let's shift gears for a bit. I want to ask you about a letter that you recently sent, head of the Oversight Committee's National Security Panel. You requested materials to look into whether Secretary of State Mike Pompeo misused CIA resources. Today was the deadline or the cutoff for that request, so I just want to ask, have you received the materials you requested, and do you have any updates on that?
No documents yet, unless we received them today. I know today was the deadline, but they've been non-responsive to most of our requests, with some exceptions, so that we have received some documents on the matter generally, but not the ones that would be most helpful.
Okay, and another major story that's reverberating around the country right now is this report that intelligence agencies believe Russia may have offered bounties, essentially, for killing U.S. soldiers. Questions seem to center on how certain we are about that. Who knew what and when? Can you tell us what you know about the situation? And if this intelligence is true, what does that mean for the United States?
Well, first of all, it was included in the president's briefing. He is saying, and others have said, that he did not read the briefing and that he's difficult to provide information to, short attention span. So he's using the excuse that he did not know about it. This is several months old, however, and the wider question is, why didn't Congress know? Why didn't they inform us? I chair the National Security Subcommittee. Why did they not? Why did our defense officials and intelligence officials inform the Intelligence Committee or my committee about the bounty program? I believe it was actually an intercept by FinCEN or one of our financial agencies that actually uncovered the payment pattern and that sort of tied this whole deal together and provided evidence of the fact of these bounties being paid. So we have a request in. I know a number of committees already have a request in to bring a number of cabinet secretaries forward and also defense and intelligence officials from the Trump administration into a hearing, classified hearing at first, but then the desire is to have public testimony as well.
Before I let you go, all of this obviously is happening during a global pandemic. Massachusetts has good rolling numbers trending in the right direction, but we're also really into the reopening now, and there are a number of southern and western states that are seeing spikes. How well are we doing as a Commonwealth and as a country?
I think we're doing very well as a Commonwealth. I really think that Governor Baker has taken it seriously. I think that we've sort of all pulled together, and we have a great healthcare network and hospital community here. And I really think we benefited from all of that. As far as the country goes, I think we suffer from the problem that the president sees this as a state-by-state issue and wants to give each governor, each state, his ability to deal with this differently. And because the coronavirus doesn't respect state borders, that's problematic. So, we've got this sort of macho thing where people don't want to wear masks and, they want to be defiant in terms of government recommendations and health expert recommendations. But, you know, that's why we're having these problems down in the southern states. Governor DeSantis down in Florida refused to close the beaches and just pretended this didn't exist. Similar situations in other states that opened too early. So those were political decisions. They were not in harmony with the health expert opinions on how to handle this. So hopefully they will take it seriously now and get on board and do what Massachusetts is doing.
And that is Massachusetts Congressman Stephen Lynch. He represents the 8th District. Congressman Lynch, I appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Thank you, Tiziana. Bye now.
So WBUR senior news correspondent Kimberly Atkins has been listening from Washington and joins us now. Hey there, Kimberly. Kimberly, do I have you?
Yep. Hi there. Can you hear me?
Hi there. I can now. Thanks. So okay. Kimberly, were you able to hear the whole interview with the congressman?
I was, yes.
Great. And let me get your reactions to what he said on what's happening with the police reform bill in the Senate and the House, his assessment of Democrats' choices in the Senate, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of many issues that we have seen in Congress. Even when there is strong public backing for a solution, when there is strong sentiment to get something done about something that's facing a crisis facing the country, it's very, very difficult for that to end up in legislation. And this is an example of that. The Republican plan and the Democrats' plan are far apart, and there's very little space, very little appetite for for a solution to be found because they're so far apart. It's just a tough job. We saw how tough it was to negotiate, for example, a relief for the coronavirus, how many weeks that took, and now we're at the tail end of that relief, and there's no sense that any more will be in sight, and we're facing a pandemic. So it's just showing how partisanship is just makes it very difficult for anything to get done in Congress, even when everybody says they want a solution.
So let's stick with the last half of what you just said, because I did want to ask you, we are at a point where some of the CARES Act money will run out, some of the provisions of that bill. There's been a question mark for a while as to whether Congress is going to pass more stimulus money or take other action. Sounds like, based on what you're hearing in Washington, the answer to that is no.
Yeah, there is no real movement to move forward with another package. And this is at a time when, as you said, the numbers of the pandemic are going in the wrong direction. Today is the last day, for example, small businesses can apply for the Paycheck Protection Act loans. Very soon, the extra boost in unemployment benefits is going to run out. That's going to run out next month. So time is ticking away, but it seems very uncertain what, if any, new round of relief might be on the way.
Kimberly, another big story that you just heard me discuss with the congressman is the report that Russia may have offered bounties, essentially, for killing U.S. soldiers. You heard what he knows. You heard his comments on that. What do you understand from the latest reporting? He said, you know, President Trump denies knowing, but got it in his presidential daily briefing. This has been changing like hour to hour. What's our up to the minute assessment of where we are on this story?
Well, one thing that I can say that Congressman Lynch mentioned is that there is a big appetite here in Washington for hearings to be held to find out exactly what happened. Lawmakers here, particularly Democrats that I've spoken to, said either one of two things happened. Either the president was not told about bounties being put on the heads of U.S. troops and allied troops, or he was told and he did nothing about it. And they said that either is unacceptable. So I think you're going to see hearings being called very soon to bring in folks to explain exactly what happened. This is an issue that certainly isn't going away anytime soon.
We know there were congressional briefings, essentially by party, Republicans yesterday, Democrats today. So two follow-up questions there. One, is that unusual under the circumstances? And two, is there a bipartisan response brewing on this? Is this sort of unacceptable and concerning across parties?
Well, this is certainly something that is very difficult for Republicans to try to defend as the facts about this come out. Having briefings based on party is not something that is unusual in recent years here in Washington, owing back to that partisanship that I was talking about. But in this case, when it's something as fundamental as the lives of active duty troops in Afghanistan being put in danger, it's extremely difficult to draw a partisan line there. So I think definitely there is concern on both sides. And I think once these hearings begin and members of the administration come in, you will hear the concern and the questions being asked from both sides.
Before I let you go, let's talk a little bit about the status of the pandemic in the country. Dr. Anthony Fauci testified in a Senate hearing today. Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren questioned him. She asked him about how many more people we may see suffering from the pandemic. And Dr. Fauci said he couldn't predict how many people might die from the virus, but here he is cautioning that infections could rise.
We are now having 40 plus thousand new cases a day. I would not be surprised if we go up to 100,000 a day if this does not turn around. And so I am very concerned.
Obviously, Kimberly, that is troubling. And we are seeing. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it's very troubling. And consider how many of these states there are plans in place to try to return students to schools and to universities and to try to reopen. A lot of these states have had to halt reopening measures. But particularly with schools and other businesses, if they cannot reopen, then that's only going to further depress the economy. And so there is an effort to say, look, we need to get this pandemic under control. The experts that testified today, they were speaking about the fact that measures need to be taken, social distancing, all of the recommendations that came out of the White House task force need to be adhered to very closely, particularly in these states, or there's no way to get a hold of this virus at any point because, you know, a vaccine isn't realistically coming until at least sometime next year. So it's a big problem.
So switching gears one more time, you have covered the Supreme Court. You're watching for the station this week. We're expecting a verdict from the court on these two subpoena cases having to do with the president's financials. Are you hearing any buzz in D.C. about what people are expecting in the results of those cases?
Yeah, the closest kept secret in Washington, D.C. is always what the U.S. Supreme Court will do. And this is probably going to be one of the last decisions that comes out of the court in the days ahead. It's a big issue, not just it won't just decide whether Congress gets a hold of President Trump's financial records, but it also will delineate just how much power Congress has to request this kind of document and to really have oversight over the executive. We saw earlier this week a decision where the Supreme Court really affirmed broad executive authority. This is where the Supreme Court gets to have a say as to just how much power Congress has with its subpoenas. It's a big deal.
Well, we hope to have you back on to talk about it when we find out the answer. That's WBUR senior news correspondent Kimberly Atkins joining from Washington. Thanks, Kimberly.
Always good to be with you.